This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. I'm Roshan Kanesan, and you're listening to Ringgit & Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. Today on the show, we're going to talk about financial literacy, following up from the financial literacy campaign that was launched last week. We're also going to talk about the upcoming e-members investment scheme coming out of EPF. And to help me discuss these two topics, I have in the studio with me Robert Fu, Managing Director of MyFP Services, the first and only fee-only financial planning firm in Malaysia. Welcome to the show, Robert.
Hi, thank you. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you back, Robert. It's been a while. So, Robert, last week we saw a few government agencies coming together to launch the financial literacy plan for Malaysia. Now, when it comes to financial literacy, it's a term that we hear a lot. I mean, we talk about it on the show all the time.
Yep.
When it comes to improving financial literacy, as an advisor yourself, how do you approach that topic?
Okay, so I saw that launch of the campaign for financial literacy. It's a good campaign. It's just that I think in the way it's being implemented, there are a lot of things that we can improve. When we talk about financial literacy, I mean, for us as financial planners, we go on the basis that if you want to have the proper financial literacy, you got to have enough information and input so that you can make proper decisions for yourself to achieve you and your family's life goals. That's what financial literacy should do to help you.
Okay, so when it comes to this campaign, you're saying that there are a few things that could be better. What are those things?
Well, I mean, the intention and the purpose of actually having this campaign is very good because the government basically is recognizing that I think the rakyat is having a problem trying to decide how to actually manage their finances and their life in order to not go into a predicament financially. So you need to provide the rakyat very independent information. Now, financial literacy does not mean that you need to know more about this product or that product or insurance or unit trust or whatever kind of thing. That is just information. What you need is independent advisors to actually tell the clients that this is the structure, this is the kind of information you need in order to plan for your life. Because it has to be goal-based. It is not just casual information. Now, if you get people who have been actually talking to the rakyat for the past, few decades, these are the same people. So if you have people who are basically have the interest to provide more information, obviously a lot of people want to sell stuff, have a lot of information to tell you. But is that financial literacy? That is not. What you want is independent people who understand finance to be able to advise people what kind of knowledge you should have and how you should decide to make the decision you need to make to achieve the goals for you and your family.
So what you're talking about here, Robert, is essentially that sometimes there's a conflict between someone who's essentially selling a financial product versus giving advice, as opposed to someone like you who is, as we mentioned at the beginning, you're a fee-only service. So there are no commissions coming in from any other...
That's right.
So when it comes to keeping an eye on possible conflicts, what should we be paying attention to?
I mean, the question is that what is the goal of that financial literacy? Is for people to know about all the different financial products in the country? Well, that is part of it. After knowing all of that, because of the different interests and purposes of products, the way it's designed, you got to have people who actually look at the interests of the family and the person. Okay, how does he decide how to make the decision to actually buy this or don't buy the other product kind of thing so that he can achieve your goals? So at the end of the day, it's based on the family or the person's goals.
So products aside, financial literacy comes down to essentially philosophies on how we manage
exactly.
Our money.
Right.
What are some of those starting philosophies? How do we start managing our money better?
Okay. So when we talk to our clients, we basically tell them, look, getting products is not the end, be all and end all to everything. At the end of the day, you need to have, it's just like when you want to travel to a certain town, it's like you using your Google Map or your Waze. Okay? What does the Google Map and the Waze tell you? You need a plan. The Google Map and Waze will ask you, where are you now? So your GPS will tell you, oh, this is where you are. Then you got to say, okay, where is the destination? That is what you call a goal. So you say, oh, that is the goal. So once you know that, then you got to decide, do I go to toll roads or can I afford to pay toll roads or do I go to kampong roads or whatever kind of thing? What do I have the time to travel? So you plan. So in financial literacy, the very important thing is that you must have a plan. And actually, in the campaign of financial literacy, they talk about, oh, people must know about financial planning. What is financial planning? It is basically, do you know how to plan? So you must give people enough information so they know how to plan, either do it themselves or use consultants or whatever kind of thing. Financial literacy does not mean that you should not know about any product. Yeah, that is important. You can know as many products as possible. But it's just like saying, if I want to go from one place to another, do I need to know all the towns? No need. You can know it, but you need to know where you are, where you want to go, and then you set the map so that you get there. So the plan will teach you how to get there in the way you want to get there. So a financial plan is that important. Okay, so product knowledge is good, but it is not the be-all and end-all to everything.
Okay, but let's break that down, Robert. What, a financial plan is, it sounds good, but it's also, it's like financial literacy, right? It's a term that is very ambiguous. Correct. It can mean so many things.
Correct.
So financial planning, is it just looking at my income, my expenses and investments? How do I structure it? Especially if I'm someone who hasn't started, how do I begin that? What is the first piece of data I look at?
Okay, when you talk about first piece of data, it's like I said, when you actually do a plan, you got to know where you are first. You can't plan without knowing where you are. Okay, so knowing where you are is where the plan requires that we got to check your cash flow situation, where is your money allocated, how much money are you getting, how much expenditure. So all this is factors. It's like a good financial plan is like saying, hey, how do you achieve good health?
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Okay? So what does health involve? Eating, food, type of food. So knowing all the different kind of foods is one way of trying to get to good health. So knowing all the product is one way to actually getting to the goal of your financial plan, your life goal. So a plan is basically a strategy, a direction, which you need to have. So all the ancillary information you need to the product, this is important, but it is not the be-all and everything. So when you do planning, the first thing you got to do is say, okay, to us, and I've actually mentioned this many times in many of the talks, I say, look, the first thing is that you got to make sure that your cash flow is okay.
Mm-hmm.
If your cash flow is not okay, you talk about insurance or investments or growing wealth, it's got to collapse.
Mm-hmm.
You got to solve your cash flow first. Okay? So once you solve your cash flow, so what are the knowledge that you need to in order to solve your cash flow? What are the tools available in the market to actually help you to find a simple, effective way to manage your cash flow? So this is the kind of financial literacy you need. Okay? Then you say, oh, I got to grow my wealth because inflation is going to eat into my net worth. Okay, then you got to look, what are the options available, an open architecture where you can actually grow your wealth?
Okay, so two things there I picked up, right? One is managing your cash flow, because that's the first thing.
Yep.
If your cash flow is not positive, whatever you do is not going to be sustainable.
Correct.
And number two, managing your wealth.
Correct.
How do you grow what you have?
Yeah.
Now, the wealth side, let's put that aside for 1 second. Let's talk about cash flow. Cash flow is very simple. It's income minus expenses,
right?
So the only way to manage it is either grow your income or decrease your expenses.
Exactly.
Or both. That obviously, expenses is only so low you can go.
Exactly.
And the other part is, of course, looking at how to grow your income. Do you have any advice when it comes to that particular topic?
Okay. When we talk to our clients about cash flow, we say, look, the first thing, the easiest thing to control is what? It's actually your expenses. If you talk to any corporate person who want to do a turnaround for any company, the first thing they do is to manage the outgoings, okay, the outflow, because that is easier. That's something you can control. It's very difficult to manage the revenues and grow the revenues or grow your salary. Kind of, that is can be done, but it's more difficult than to manage your outflow. So once you manage your outflow, then you got to go and say, okay, what is the inflow? Is it single inflow? Should you increase it to multiple inflow? Okay, so this is the thing that we actually discussed this in the VFM before. I said, look, we always preach that you have to have two incomes,
mm-hmm.
whether it's income, salary, and rental, whatever, you choose it. Because if one of your things gets affected in this kind of world where things can change, you can lose your job and all that. So where is your fallback income?
Mm-hmm.
You got to have that. So we have to manage it. So that is the kind of financial literacy people need to have.
Right. So on a step-by-step basis, right, let's try and untangle this this mess, really, because it is what it is. Financial literacy can become very messy. Financial planning can become very messy because we all have our own daily lives to deal with. And on top of that, we've got all this different data to deal with. Right. So number one, look at your income and expenses.
Yep.
Right? Now, if you've only got one source of income, then you try and look for a second source of income because as you just talked about, it's a fallback. But that's like a second priority, right? Because at the end of the day, you've got to focus on your primary income and your primary expenses first.
Definitely.
Yeah, because that secondary income is basically growing wealth as well.
Well, that's where it comes together. Mm-hmm. Okay, but you need to have a way where your income that's coming into you, whether to your salary or through a business you're doing, you have to have a fallback plan. Mm-hmm. Because of the increasing volatility of the economy now, you have to have that.
So that's a big part of it. Managing your primary income, trying to establish a secondary income, and managing your expenses so that whatever it is, your cash flow positive. Because that's the main goal. That's the first thing.
Yep, that's the lifeblood of financial planning.
Yeah, there's nothing more important than managing your cash flow because whatever you do after is just not sustainable. So when it comes to growing wealth, that's the secondary. It's important, but it's not as urgent as maintaining your cash flow.
Well, I think it depends on the situation each person is in. Like I said, you got to know where you are. So if you come from a family who actually, you get a heritage and stuff like that, your parents will give you 10 million kind of, so you will be very different starting position from mm-hmm. many other people. Mm-hmm. But you still need to grow because inflation eats into your wealth. Mm-hmm. Okay, so when you grow, then you got to ask yourself, what other options do I have to grow? Do I do a business? Do I go into the gig economy? Do I go into shares? Do I go and buy unit trust? Do I go into Malaysia? Do I go offshore? You got to go to any legal place that you can to actually increase your wealth.
And all that is essentially to grow your wealth so that it beats inflation in the longer run. And in Malaysia, one of those things that we have is for retirement is EPF. And up next, we're going to talk about the upcoming e-members investment scheme that's coming out, I think, later this year. This is Ringgit & Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9, welcome back to Ringgit & Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. Today, I'm speaking to Robert Fu, Managing Director of MyFP Services, the first and only fee-only financial planning firm in Malaysia. Robert, when we left off, we were just talking about EPF and their upcoming e-members investment scheme coming out later this year. Now, this is a scheme that allows EPF members to take out their money from EPF for the specific purpose of investing. The first question I have on my mind is this. If, you know, EPF has done relatively well, I mean, this year they gave us about 6%, last year was 6.75%. Overall, pretty good numbers.
Yep.
Why would anyone take their money out to invest it themselves?
That's an excellent question. So that is the question when I give talks, people say, hey, Robert, should I take my EPF and invest into unit trust? So the question is EPF giving enough information for financial literacy of the contributors to make a decision? Mm-hmm. So EPF has gone around to say that, well, these are the approved funds. This, you know, a company has, let's say, 50 funds, and we have approved actually 8 funds, which is approved by EPF for you to actually invest your EPF money. So EPF actually should go to the point to say that, look, out of these few fellas we approve you, how many percent of them has actually performed better than the EPF return in the last 5 years? EPF has not provided that information. We have done a very rough calculation. We found that actually for generally, for 1 out of 4 do not perform better than EPF over the last 3-5 years.
Right, okay.
So then you got to tell the contributors, look, whenever you have this choice, although we approved it, it doesn't mean 100% you'll be performing better. You got to think through. You got to get the financial literacy and information to actually make a decision and create a portfolio to get a return which is probably better than EPF. The odds are maybe better. EPF has to provide that information to the contributors.
All right, so that's the dilemma right here, right? If you're going to take out that money and invest it, you're going to want to beat EPF. If
Definitely.
Not, you've lost money.
Yeah.
But there doesn't seem to be much information at this point, or not enough to really make an educated decision.
Correct.
Because whatever financial decisions we make, we have to know the products we're investing in. And at this point, like from your analysis, you've said 1 out of 4.
Yep.
1 out of 4 is a significant number.
Yeah, and I would wish that actually the EPF actually comes up with the numbers.
Essentially, this is a lot of business for potential fund houses to go in.
A lot.
I would guess that EPF would have a lot of say in what happens here.
Definitely. Because when you talk about the e-platform for them to actually invest their EPF money directly to the companies without going through another intermediary and all that. Okay, then the issue now is that EPF is approving these funds. You have the clout and authority to approve this fund. Why can't EPF try to talk to the asset manager and say, hey guys, maybe 1.5% per annum probably can be very high. Can you please reduce it for our EPF members to maybe 1% or 1.25%? That will be actually EPF trying to do things for the benefit of the contributors, not just approving it.
Right. So but at this point, isn't 1.5% like lower than what they would be charging commercially?
Because in some other fund houses in the world, actually they actually charge you only 1.25 or even 1%. So why is it locally we are being charged 1.5? In fact, for some of the funds, depends on whether they have an OOC exposure, they can even go up to 1.75.
Right. So you've got a question mark over the fee structure here.
Yeah.
Robert, so this is another question I have. Now, if there is an additional fee involved, if I'm going to take my money out and invest in this fund, and this fund is going to charge me 1.5%, this fund has got to do a lot better than EPF in order for me to net off my
definitely
my returns.
Yeah, that's where the contributors need to have that kind of information, and so that they can use the financial literacy they have to make the decision. Because now, what you hear basically many times is just sales hype.
Mm-hmm. So let's take this into context. EPF gave us, I think, 6.15% dividend this year.
Okay.
1.5% on top of that is, what, 7.5%?
Yep.
A fund house would have had to do at least 7.5% in order to match what EPF
did. So when you go to Morningstar, and Morningstar actually tracks all the funds in the Malaysia and all the world, and Morningstar says that if you have an equity fund, Malaysia, the last 10 years, the return is probably net of... not net of the sales commission, okay, is a fund return. It's probably about 7.5% per annum.
And that's you haven't netted out the fees yet.
Exactly. So then you got to ask, so who has this information in order to help the contributors and the people make good decisions based on the information of financial literacy and all that?
Mm-hmm. So from what I'm hearing right now, it's basically this, especially in light of the whole financial literacy program that we are seeing, it would have been nice to see EPF put all that data out there.
Oh, yeah, that would be wonderful.
So I guess, Robert, my question to you is, would you take your money out and invest it, or would you leave it in EPF?
Well, the question is the probability is that it's not whether you can or cannot. Once you have the platform, you can do it. Another question is, should you do it? So you need the numbers and the historical information and the financial information to make a decision to say, well, I want to increase my probability of getting a return that is better than EPF. Can you do it? Yes, you can. But can you do it all the time? No, you can't. So you got to have the numbers to make that decision. If you can do it yourself, do it yourself. That is the cheapest. If you can't do it, you need a consultant. Then go and find really independent people to help you.
So, Robert, before we end, let's talk about, let's go back to financial literacy. What would you have liked to see come out of the financial literacy campaign last week?
I think the campaign got to deal with many people, but also deal with people from an independent slant, okay, who are not tied to any product provider, thing like that, so that you get a more objective view for the interests of the people who are the listeners, the rakyat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that is important, because otherwise you will end up into a situation where the campaign is essentially like a sales campaign.
Right, so are you concerned that there are too many product people involved?
I am.
All right, so that's something we all need to keep in mind, right? Whenever we get any sort of advice, whether it's financial or otherwise, even health, keeping an eye on the possible conflicts that could come up from there is very, very important.
Yep.
And on that note, Robert, thank you so much for coming by. I look forward to speaking to you again soon. I'm sure you'll have plenty to say about something else.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
This was Ring It In Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. If you have any comments or thought there were any questions that you would have liked to ask Robert, let me know. You can either tweet to me at BFM Radio or at Roshan Kanisan. This was Ring It In Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. Up next is the 10 a.m. News Bulletin and then Enterprise. I'm Roshan Kanisan, signing off for The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.